I will have most of my clients that I work with doing these heavy compound lifts will work up to working with barbells.
Mm-hmm.
And it won't necessarily be light weight either. I mean, we'll try to push some heavy weight to try to pack on some lean mass. Cardio is definitely important, but I think where a lot of people go, I don't say wrong, but less efficient, where a lot of people take it is they do way too much cardio right off the bat.
Yeah.
Where I think it could be more beneficial to focus more on trying to build and maintain as much muscle as basically you possibly can, and then burn some extra calories with your cardio.
Welcome to episode number 38. To access the show notes and additional information, please visit highintensityhealth.com/Dan. Hope you enjoy.
Welcome to High Intensity Health Radio, the best of fitness, nutrition, and functional medicine.
And now here's your host, Mike Mutzel.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm very excited that you're listening to the show. We're going to talk about advanced tips and strategies that can improve your sports performance, whether you're a CrossFitter, a weekend warrior, or maybe you just do cardio and you walk and you don't go to the gym. Everyone in between, you're going to benefit from listening to this show because we're going to talk about mobility. We're going to talk about getting the compound movements down and mastering them. And what I mean by that is the bench, the squat, the deadlift, how those are so fundamental and how a lot of CrossFit is built upon variations or progressions of deadlifts and squats and so on. And that's what's really important to master form and technique. And we're live with my own personal trainer, Dan Stephenson. He works and sees clients and trains clients at one of Washington State's most prestigious athletic clubs, a pro club. He has a bachelor's degree in exercise science from Eastern Washington University. He's an ACSM certified personal trainer. And most importantly, the reason why I work with Dan is he practices what he preaches, and he's currently the Washington State powerlifting record holder in both deadlift and squat. So, and bench press, I believe he can bench press a lot of weight. So anyway, I just love that Dan really practices what he teaches and is not just, you know, reverberating something he learned in a textbook. He really, implements his own teachings into his workout programs, and clearly they're working. So Dan, welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be on here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about your journey. I'm sure you have a personal story as to how you got into fitness and eventually powerlifting and personal training. So let's take us there and tell us what you learned and how you got into it.
Yeah, definitely. I actually started out probably early teenage years. Didn't play a whole lot of sports growing up, and kind of found weight training as essentially my sport. Didn't really compete back then, but just started lifting and really fell in love with it, and started actually learning more and basically hurt myself. That led me to really try to dig in and learn more about, you know, why I hurt myself. So I kind of strained my back a little bit. So doing more and more research just interested me more and more. One thing led to another. Basically started lifting all the way through high school, all the way through college, kind of the route that I took, learning more about exercise science, and eventually ended up getting a degree in that. And all the while, personal training right out of high school, actually, and nice. Just trying to find too much skill since then.
Absolutely. And I think, you know this, Dan, that I hurt my back as well, deadlifting, but I'd love to learn what you were doing wrong and how did you hurt your back?
Yeah, sure. I was a young kid, probably about 13 or so, learning or trying to bench press, because that's what everybody wants to know, how much you bench press. So
right.
Big arch in my back and not really focusing or didn't really know technique. And I think I might have even had my butt up off the bench. And it just really strained immediately after that, actually, probably in a couple of days. Ended up getting meningitis and was actually bedridden for about a week.
Man.
And that didn't help heal it at all. So just it kind of stuck with that for about 2 years, I'd say. I actually started playing tennis around the time and I kept getting spasms. So I went to a chiropractor and physical therapist. Yeah, really, it took a while to strengthen my core and actually learn to stretch the right muscles and strengthen the right muscles to keep it in a better position to overcome that, because it just kept spasming out. So it was bench press. So, yeah.
Yeah. And to this day, do you still get, you know, challenges with your back? I know we'll talk about some of your successes with powerlifting, but you're lifting heavy weight. So how is that now?
Occasionally I'll throw it out, but it's not nearly as bad as it has been. With enough preparatory movements, strengthening up the core, warming up properly, it's really been very rare occasions where I might have a weight just where the bars slip on me a little bit and then it will tweak my hips or my back. But usually I'll bounce right back in within a week or so.
Nice.
It just takes time to build that strength and build that technique to really help prevent that as well. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I learned from you and before doing these compound movements, which we'll dive into and all the health benefits and, you know, how people can benefit from doing them is the importance of your pre-workout. And like you said, warming up and getting the core ready. And that was something that I really learned from you is firing those glutes and getting the core activated and stretching out the hip flexors, creating mobility. So let's talk about that before we dive into powerlifting and strength training. How important is, you know, that pre-workout component, not so much the nutrition, but really the strengthening and glute activation?
Well, yeah, I think that's definitely important. I recently shared something on Facebook from the 1020 Life, Brian Carroll and Dr. Stuart McGill, the McGill Big Three, which is essentially three different exercises meant to basically activate your core and stiffen it up. I think a lot of people, more recently, mobility has kind of gotten that's a very hot topic. I think some people have to kind of take a step back and take a look at how much do they need versus how much they are actually doing, because it's not necessarily a good thing to have hypermobility or to be very loose before you get under heavy weight. So I think the activation and more preparing your body for the weight is a little bit more appropriate as long as you have the necessary mobility to get into the positions that you need to get to keep proper technique.
Nice. Okay. So we'll have a link to that article. Is that on your blog then or just on Facebook?
That should be on Facebook.
Okay.
I'll have to share that on the blog too.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, well, let's talk about some of these compound movements. You've been a trainer for quite some time and, you know, have really excelled in powerlifting. And we know that a lot of the bodybuilders and so forth, the individuals that, whether male or female, that have really nice physiques, stick to the core movements of bench press and squats and deadlifts and military presses. And in your opinion, why is it so important? And how can people implement these safely into their workout routines?
I think the biggest thing is the time efficiency. If you look at the really the big core movement, I mean, working most of the body pretty much during all of them with proper technique, of course. If you were to break out every individual muscle group, you'd be doing your bicep curls, shoulder press, everything individually, you'd be in the gym for much longer. So the time efficiency, I think, is a huge thing of why the compound movements are so necessary. They also help to create balance. If they're programmed right, you're not going to necessarily, you know, do way too much bicep to tricep necessarily and create a muscle imbalance that way and lead to more injury. So I think using those basically as a foundation is very important. And I mean, it goes to show, I mean, it's the core movements of a lot of foundational programs that have been successful. Starting strength, CrossFit is mostly based off of those movements as well. Mm-hmm. Powerlifting is those three lifts, the bench, the squat, and the deadlift. So I think, yeah, there's definitely importance to that.
Yeah, and you mentioned like
everything on that, or
I was just sorry to interrupt you, but you mentioned that, you know, like triceps, and it's very common. You know, when I go to the gym, when I go to the pro club, I look around and, you know, just kind of observe individuals, and I'll see someone come in right off, say, the elliptical and go right, like you said, to the tricep machine, do some, you know, arm curls, do some tricep pushdowns and maybe some lateral raises, and that's their workout, you know, and they leave and,
yeah,
and that's it. Whereas, you know, what I've learned from you and just my own background in fitness and so on is, well, if I do military presses or bench presses or handstand pushups or what have you, I'm not only working my triceps, but like you said, I'm activating my core, I'm working my upper chest and all these different, you know, components. And like you said, the time efficiency, but recruiting so many different muscles that are also functional for everyday living in life, which will prevent age-related diseases and so on. But you're getting a lot more, I think, bang for your buck by sticking to these compound movements.
Definitely. I think another way to look at that too is you're working movements rather than muscles when you do that. I mean, that's going to work a high number of muscles as opposed to just doing isolation exercises. So yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with that one. It's very efficient and definitely involves your core a lot more than, say, the tricep machine or anything like that. So
sure.
Efficiency for sure.
movements rather than muscles. I like that. We'll have to use that more on the show. So let's talk about some of the clients that you've worked with. You've worked with many different CEOs, executives, and so on. Some of the individuals that come to you that are, you know, fresh, new to fitness, for example, what are some of the strategies that you like to implement in their life in terms of, you know, fitness and incorporating these compound movements? And we'll talk about the successful ones and some clients that maybe don't have the success with their goals, whether it's they don't lose the weight that they want, they don't improve their body composition. How do they generally fail? Is there some pattern that you've noticed and maybe mindset or the types of exercises that they tend to incorporate when they're not training with you?
I would say a big part of that would be the mindset. I think that's a huge part. Mm-hmm. The ones that I've seen more successful, I think, really have more of embraced and accepted health and fitness as a lifestyle change rather than just a quick fix. A lot of people, kind of a challenge to break that mold in some people's mind, but they think of it as, oh, I need to get to this weight. This is, once I get there, I'm good. So they really will do like the bare minimum in terms of getting there. They seem more short-minded in their journey. Some of them that I only meet with like once per week, for example, that might be the only weight training that they get in. Even though I'm encouraging them to do more weight training, they don't. Either their schedules don't allow it or they really don't prioritize it and accept it as this is something that needs to get done in order for me to get to this point. Mm-hmm. But I think that mindset of really having it as a lifestyle change rather than a means to an end is really what kind of makes or break whether or not the clients will be successful.
I like that. That's so true in life or business or anything. It's just making those lifestyle changes and making the time, like you said. So these individuals that are very successful, they're dedicated. They know that they need to change their life or they're not going to improve their health.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's different aspects inside the gym and outside as well. So you may have a client that comes in and they kill every workout with you, but outside the gym, they're not sleeping. They're not taking care of their health. They're drinking, you know, 3 times a week, just poor diet, things like that, that really add up to work against them. Mm-hmm. Or maybe get some good workouts in, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to lead to anything. When maybe counteracting some of what they're doing outside of the gym. It might be 1 hour out of however many hours there are in a week that they're doing towards their goal.
Yeah, nutrition is so important, Dan. And one thing that I've cut out in my life, you know, for the most part is alcohol. And, you know, for a long time, there was so much conflicting research on alcohol, you know, like there's hops and beer, so it's beneficial. And then the red wine polyphenols and all these different things. So my wife and I would drink a glass or two at night and I wasn't recovering the same. I'm not as lean. I'm kind of chubby in the face. What is going on here? And then, so we just decided, you know, cold turkey, let's just get rid of the alcohol. Let's just do a Monday through Friday. No, not even one glass of red wine. And our workouts are better. We're leaner. We're more vascular. We're stronger. I mean, it's amazing. Just a simple thing. But for some reason, we just couldn't shake it or we didn't really realize that it was affecting our life that much. And so that's why I think fitness is so important and wanted to have you on because, you know, when you're working out and you know the weights that you move, which we'll talk about, like when I squat, I can lift X number of pounds for a certain number of reps. And then when you notice like, oh man, next week, I can't even do what I did last week. What is going on? And so I think for having that, the gym as a lifestyle habit, a lifestyle change, it gives you that thermostat, so to speak, so that you know where your health of your entire body is at any given point in time. And if you see increases or decrease, you can look back on the habits and daily routines of your life and see if you're moving forward or moving backwards. So that's why I think fitness is just so great if people can really grab it by the horns and incorporate that. So
definitely. Well put.
Yeah. So let's get into powerlifting and strength. And one thing I want to tackle and address, a common myth, and I see this, my wife is one, right? You've met Deanna. She's been working out for quite some time and she would never do squats, never do deadlifts. You know, she was one of these, would go around, do the circuits on the machines because she was afraid to put on muscle. And since she started working out with Tasha, you know, she's leaned up, but she hasn't bulked up. So let's tackle the myth that if women do powerlifting or these compound movements that they're going to turn into bodybuilders.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's I don't know why that myth will go away, but it's very true. I mean, I think women typically are afraid of bulking up and it takes a lot of work to add that muscle. And oftentimes, I think it also takes some pharmaceuticals really to get to the point where they may have an image in their head or where they might end up if they start lifting weights. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, obviously not taking that, so that shouldn't really be a concern. But lifting weights for women, I think, can be a very empowering thing. For one, it will build up lean muscle, which will help to burn more body fat. They don't necessarily have the correct hormone set, really, to pack on muscle as, say, a guy would. Well, it's kind of tough to get that through sometimes, but if you look at Deanna and look at Tasha as well, I mean, they're great examples of very lean, muscular women that don't look like masculine mm-hmm. by any means. And both of them do a lot of resistance training.
Right. Neither one of them would scare anyone away. You know, they could wear a cocktail dress and yeah, they are toned, but they are not huge. And so that's one thing that I hear about a lot when I, you know, ever do public speaking or talk to doctors is women are scared to put on too much muscle. And I'm sure there's a subset of women out there that would love to put on just a huge amount of muscle and hope that this myth was really true, but it's really not. And with that said, let's talk about some strategies for women that want to burn fat, because as you know, Dan, we burn fat in our muscle inside the mitochondria. So the more lean muscle we have, the more fat we can burn. So from what you've seen in your successful clients that you've worked with, let's get into the nitty gritty. Like, are we doing squats, deadlifts, cleans, military presses? What are some programs that you would set up for these individuals?
Generally speaking, unless there's some kind of injury or some kind of barrier, I will have most of my clients that I work with doing these heavy compound lifts will work up to working with barbells. Mm-hmm. And it won't necessarily be light weight either. I mean, we'll try to push some heavy weight to try to pack on some lean mass. Cardio is definitely important, but I think where a lot of people go, I don't say wrong, but less efficient, where a lot of people take it is they do way too much cardio right off the bat.
Yeah.
Where I think it could be more beneficial to focus more on trying to build and maintain as much muscle as basically you possibly can, and then burn some extra calories with your cardio. So that's kind of a mold that I try to take, male or female, really, is to build up some lean muscle and trim some body fat, utilizing cardio to burn that extra calorie. So I may have someone do maybe 2 to 4 times a week of cardio, alternating some different types. So like, say when we do our session, say we're meeting twice a week, we'll do weight training, working up into the heavy compound lifts. It might be a while before we get there, learning movement, gaining mobility, et cetera. And then we'll basically program them to do more high-intensity interval training or some kind of interval-based training where it kind of mimics the same energy systems that you use during a weight training session. It's going to be quicker, more efficient. That way you're not training necessarily 2 hours a day, getting your hour of cardio and your hour of strength training. It's more like maybe 50 minutes of strength training and then maybe 20 minutes of cardio. And then on the off days that we're not lifting, that may be more of the aerobic based cardio where they're doing, you know, working up to maybe 45 to 60 minutes or so of aerobic activity. That's a traditional, cardio that most people think of when you say the C word there, the cardio. So.
Perfect. Now, I want to touch on something that you mentioned, and you mentioned individuals when they first come to see you maybe be doing too much cardio, and they really don't notice that they're catabolizing their own muscle. And if they're not doing these heavy compound movements at the same, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I'm just speaking out loud. If they're not doing, say, squats, cleans, deadlifts, and they don't have a good baseline as to where their strength is, they really won't know if they're doing too much cardio or not. The scale might look good, but they could be burning muscle instead of fat, right?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty correct statement.
So again, it goes back to getting these compound lifts down, mastering them, work with your trainer. You can look at Dan's site, you know, idealstrength.com and learn more about technique and strategies and mobility. But it's so important to get these baseline lifts down because you have a good barometer as to where your strength is. And if you're burning muscle, you're not going to be improving. You won't be able to lift as much if you're not sleeping as well as you should, if you're not eating like you should be. And so that's just my personal bias. As you can tell, I'm just so adamant about this, but it gives you a nice baseline about, you know, where things are at. So, and I liked what you said, Dan, instead of doing cardio every single day or after every workout, we can shorten the rest between different sets, and that can get those energy systems, as you said, firing just like cardio would.
Definitely, yeah. Circuit training, that's a great way to burn a ton of calories while getting some strength training. and some cardio in as well. So just real short rest. You'll get your heart rate up. Well, at least if you're really putting in the effort, you can definitely get your cardio done with the weight. So I think that's a very good point to bring up. With that, you might want to just know that you're probably not hitting heavy enough weight in a circuit training workout to really add as much muscle, or it won't be optimal, I should say, to add as much muscle. So I think that's a good strategy, but also I think there should be some divided, more strength workouts, more circuit training, and then some more cardio workouts, and kind of a mixture of the three, I think, would be the best way to go.
Right. So what I hear you're saying is it's nice to balance, because we need that high intensity but low duration power movements to build that lean muscle that's so metabolically healthy. But at the same time, we want to engage our cardiovascular system, but we shouldn't be doing one or the other too much. We need to blend the two.
Definitely.
And in your opinion, obviously everyone's unique and individual and based upon their goals, but overall fitness, overall health, fat burning, if someone's working out 3 to 4 days a week, how would you divide that up in terms of like, okay, day one is going to be heavy powerlifting. Day two is going to be more interval based. What's your strategy?
Well, if we take, let's just say maybe the average client, a weight loss or general health improvement client, and they say I can work out 3 to 4 days per week, I would set up a program basically where we're trying to maximize the best of those 3 to 4 days. So let's say let's work with four. Three of those days, I'd probably make more of a strength-based and interval-based for cardio routine. Then maybe that fourth, throw in a circuit training or aerobic conditioning day. And that way we're kind of hitting basically a spectrum of the high-intensity stuff, the heavyweight training, as well as the lower-intensity, longer-duration aerobic system as well, and the anaerobic system. So seem to be a good approach to conditioning, as well as adding that lean mass as well.
Perfect. Now, one thing that I didn't really know there was a difference between on a biochemical level was you mentioned strength training, but how is hypertrophy based training, like adding new muscle mass, how is that really different in terms of sets and reps versus the strength training that we've been discussing?
I would say, and this is probably more anecdotal from experience and everything, but I would approach more of a power strength-based training, more of the thought process of trying to develop force against the resistance. Oftentimes, it will be pretty heavy, probably about 80 to, say, 100% of your one rep max, per se. Hypertrophy training may incorporate some of the same concepts in strength training or power, but the focus, I think, would be more on muscular contractions. Basically, you might have a bit more isolation work done in a hypertrophy session as you would in a power strength-based session. So I would still take a hypertrophy client or muscle-gaining client through a lot of the heavy compounds, but I would tack on a bit more volume and a bit more exercises to target specific areas and really just deplete a muscle, just beat it down, basically. So that would be where your isolation work comes into play. And really bringing it down to muscular failure, which might not be ideal when you're looking at improving your power and strength.
I see. That makes sense. So you could even go really long and slow reps, so to speak, focus on negatives. That would really be, like you said, beating the muscle down.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, I think that would work better for hypertrophy. The power strength, you really want to kind of build up your motor patterns and try to work on developing the most force that you can against resistance. And that's something that I focus on with like powerlifting, for example. Mm-hmm. I don't try to take my heavy compounds to an absolute muscle failure, because that might throw off my ability to maintain that technique and ingrain that same motor pattern.
I see. Now, in your experience, what's better for improving body comp? This taking that, beating down the muscle, so to speak, in the hypertrophy type setting, or really the strength, or the combination of the two?
I would say more the combination of the two. There's a whole idea of periodization, to where you might have a kind of a sub goal for, say, a month at a time, or maybe 4 to 8 weeks, we'll say, to where your goal is hypertrophy, to where you're trying to gain as much muscle as you can during this time. Your cardio might be a little bit lower. Moving from a hypertrophy goal, you may go into a, say, strength-based goal. To where the next 6 to 8 weeks are going to really focus on building up your strength. Mm. So I would say a good plan would really incorporate more of a long-term calendar and break down different cycles. So 4 to 8 weeks in terms of what your goal is for each cycle, each training cycle.
That's great. So I think that's really important. I was one of these people that ascribed to picking up like muscular fitness and, you know, would see a back workout and I would just, you know, try that and do what the experts say. And then, oh, I see the arm workout, I'm going to do that. And then when I, you know, met you and started working with you in December of 2013, this is, you know, fitness and, you know, strength. And like you said, these different periodization techniques have become very analytical and very scientific. I mean, before we even started, we're punching numbers into spreadsheets and we have goals for every week. And that's why I think it's really good for individuals, even if they think they know what they're doing at the gym, they have good form, but getting that scientific rigor or applying that to their workout program is really great and can accelerate your gains and body composition changes.
Yeah. A lot of these people, the individuals that I work with are very numbers driven too. So I think they like to see that too, is here's my goal for this week. I'm going to try to hit this weight for this many sets and reps. So I think that helps a lot of these individuals that I work with to stay motivated with it as well. So,
In addition to, if say the scale's not changing, maybe body composition is changing, but it's not being reflected on the scale. And what I mean by that is lean muscle mass is increasing and body fat is being reduced, but the weight is staying the same, which is what we want. But I know some people are so fixated on their overall weight. So that'll be nice. You know, you can see the numbers improving, you can see strength markers improving and, you know, compared to where you start with. So Dan, what is the system that you use? I mean, is there, you know, where can we find more information about this?
Well, I think a good goal-based, well, you got to have basically some measurements to assess your progress. So like you're saying, you can't just rely on the scale. So one thing that I like to do, unfortunately, the BIA, bioelectrical impedance analysis, isn't very accurate. So I don't use that too heavily, but I could always do circumference measurements. Mm. And that's usually a better indicator of how somebody's body composition is changing along with the scale. So that's something that I kind of focus on a bit more, or maybe even pant size or jean size, or moving somebody up or down in, say, their shirt size.
Yeah.
So that's a great way to measure progress, as well as the whole strength side as well. So, you know, are you moving more weight than you were 3 months ago? Or can you run this 5K that much faster, that kind of thing. So I think you need to kind of cover a wide base, depending on goals. Basically things to measure to assess your progress.
Perfect. Yeah, I like that. And you hit on something I would love for you to expand upon, and pant size or shirt size changing. And I hear this a lot from doctors that I work with, and they get a patient or something that's frustrated, like, well, I'm in the pants I haven't worn in 10 years, but the scale's the same, and they're frustrated. Like, you know, are things going in the right direction? So what would you say to them?
Yeah. Sounds like they are. You're fitting into the jeans that you know, once were able to fit in 10 years ago, and your scale's the same. That's probably exactly what you want. Another good indicator would be if you are seeing your doctor, have some blood work done, get your blood pressure taken, all those health parameters as well, I think is a really strong indication of, am I setting out to improve my health and fitness?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that I personally, I mean, if I, you know, during the winter time, I tend to, you know, we all put on a little bit more weight, not too much, but, and I'll notice pant sizes, you know, my jeans are feeling a little tight sometimes. And that's like, oh my gosh, I'm, you know, I'm not eating like I should be. I'm not working out like I should be, or I'm skipping days, or I'm traveling too much. And so I think that's, in my opinion, and I'm not an expert here, but I think, you know, pant sizes or clothes sizes, unless you've never put your pants in the dryer and all of a sudden you put them in the dryer, but if they feel tighter or looser, that's a really good indicator that hopefully you're doing the right thing. And, you know, you're improving your body composition. So again, I think the take home message here is don't be so fixated on the scale, because I mean, who knows, the scale could be out of true or what have you. So, okay,
definitely.
Dan, let's, as we, you know, tend to wrap up here, let's talk about CrossFit. And I know you periodically do CrossFit, and CrossFit is exploding everywhere and it's really improving a lot of people's lives. Let's talk about your opinion about CrossFit, and should people if they haven't been doing these compound movements that we've been talking about, should they jump into CrossFit? Should they meet with a trainer like yourself first? What should they do?
Well, this is a, this could be a whole nother blog, I think, or a whole nother podcast by itself. I don't feel that it's for everybody. I do feel that you need to have a very strong foundation before you go into something like CrossFit. It also depends on who is doing it and how well they are doing it, your instructors. Just like personal training, I mean, there's not really a set standard in who's telling you what to do, which is unfortunate. I mean, you can count on certifications and everything, but it's still pretty widespread in terms of people's skill sets in instructing these moves, keeping proper form, and really setting you up for success or injury. Possibly. So I do feel people with a strong foundation, CrossFit can be great for. If they have pretty good body awareness, they know how to squat, deadlift, basically move well, they can really excel in something like CrossFit because it brings a lot of different variables that regular strength training may not. In terms of intensity, the competition between you and your peers, as well as just the amount of work that you may do in one workout, as opposed to say it, well, let's say one workout in CrossFit might be like 20, 30 minutes, as opposed to maybe a 60 to 90 minute session, in just a regular gym. So I do think there's definitely some pros to it, but I do think or feel that it can be a bit risky jumping in without a strong foundation and good body awareness. So I would recommend people that are interested in CrossFit to probably get some individual work with a personal trainer, at least a handful of sessions to really get your movement down and to really get thoroughly assessed in terms of your movement. I know there is some progressive gyms that will do more movement assessments, or CrossFit gyms, I should say, before they include them into the whole group class. They have like a ramp up program, but it is also, you're looking at one instructor to maybe 5 to maybe 25 athletes, or I should say, you know, maybe not even athletes at this point, general population that they're trying to put through a workout. So I do feel there's a very big benefit to having individual coaching before you go into something that has that additional variable, such as the intensity, the high rep movements with the high skill exercises. So
I love it.
It can be done well, but not always the case.
I'm with you. And I both love and don't like CrossFit for all the reasons you said. And I want to just pick apart what you said. So I heard you say is there's both good and bad. There's community, there's competition, which can really help people to push themselves to the next level. If you see, you know, if you're a, 6'3", 195 pound guy, and you see a 105 pound woman squatting more than you, you're going to want to, you're going to go work out harder and harder and be like, what the heck, and push yourself to the next level. And that's great. But on the flip side, there's that caveat that, we're doing Olympic lifts and we're not resting as much in between. We're, pushing ourselves to the max. If our form is off, we can really get hurt. Individuals can get hurt. But also, I'd love your opinion, Dan, on and how do you feel about doing these Olympic lifts for high reps? Because we all know, and I've learned this from you and in my own study, is, you shouldn't be deadlifting 20 reps. These are low rep movement. You can strain your back. So let's talk about your, how do you feel about that? Should people be doing these movements under high reps or?
I don't necessarily agree with the high amount of volume and low amount of rest that some of those workouts basically entail, just because the risk will increase basically exponentially the more that you add to it. So I agree with you. I think a lot of the Olympic lifts, as well as the compound movements such as deadlifts, power cleans, snatches, or squats, really should be monitored a bit closer in terms of how much volume is done in a certain amount of time or how many repetitions are done, and also the rest and really having somebody watch your technique, because once that goes, you can really set yourself up for trouble.
Right.
I think that's one place where I think a lot of mistakes can definitely be made in terms of the injury rates. And yeah, you want to, I'd say that's probably the best way to improve your health and fitness is to stay healthy and injury free.
Yeah. Couldn't agree with that more. And my wife's a chiropractor and she sees a lot of athletes in Bellevue that, you know, have, whether it's subluxation issues or herniated discs from doing heavy deadlifts for high volume, high reps. And so that's one of these things where I've learned from you is, you know, keep it low rep and keep the intensity there. And you know, if you want to do a high rep, so to speak, to build up maybe those medium fast twitch muscle fibers, then just shorten the rest period, but don't necessarily go in and do 25 reps on a deadlift for weight because you can hurt yourself. So someone is listening to this and they have a friend that is encouraging them to do CrossFit, which I think we both agree is good, but you should see a trainer first and get your form down or really work with a gym that is really great at, you know, fine tuning form. What exercises do you think, there are snatches, cleans, deadlifts, should they really focus in on and master before they try to be very competitive with this?
Well, let's see. I think do you take a look at some of those, say the bigger movements, the power clean and the snatch, for example. There's a number of different movements that go into the main movement. So, power clean, for example, it starts with the deadlift. So you really should be able to be proficient in deadlifts before you start power cleaning. Mm. On top of that, it also usually you're catching it in a moderately deep front squat. So you got to know how to front squat before you can, power clean. A big part of that is really, do you have the shoulder mobility to even get into the bottom position of a front squat and keep your elbows lifted without wrecking your shoulder or elbows or wrists, for example, before you even do your power clean. So there's a whole lot of, basically a breakdown each movement, and you should be able to almost have a checklist of, you know, can I do a proficient deadlift? Can I do a proficient front squat? Then maybe you can add the intensity, or do I have appropriate shoulder mobility? And then if you have all those, then maybe experience with applying that intensity in the force of a full power clean and upping your weight on that. But there's definitely a checklist to each of those Olympic moves that really should be accomplished before you even mess with those weights. I know for myself, some of my experience with CrossFit is doing a workout with a kettlebell. There's an American and a Russian style swing. The Russian style is a bit more about hip dominance, so it mimics a bit more of a deadlift. And that's what I'm a bit more proficient in. The American style, which CrossFit often uses, is more for competition purposes, getting the bell from the bottom all the way locked up over your head. So the bottom of the bell will have to be pointed towards the ceiling. My current state, my shoulder mobility isn't necessarily all there to have that narrow of a grip on a kettlebell and lock my elbows up overhead. So participating in a workout and a competition aspect, I experienced a little bit of some shoulder trouble by repeatedly throwing it up there when I really didn't have the appropriate mobility to even do that movement, but it is part of the competition. So it's kind of a, you know, you got to make sure you basically clear these things before you partake in the full on competition. Mm-hmm. For the workout.
Well said. And that was one thing that you and I worked on together, was getting that mobility down and getting the movement down and really driving from the hips, not swinging your arms, because that can lead to injury.
Yeah, definitely. With the Russian style kettlebell swing, for sure.
Yeah, there's quite a few people that I've met that have injured their low back doing kettlebell swings. I think it looks like a real easy, nice workout. You can just go in there and you don't have to deadlift and put all this weight on the bar. You just kind of swing things around. But surprisingly, there's a lot of injury from that.
Yeah, there's a tremendous amount of force you can develop with a swing, definitely. You're swinging, say, for example, a 20 kilogram kettlebell, which is pretty standard for a male athlete. That's about 45 pounds, and you're aggressively swinging that out in front of your body, which is at arm's length. So it's a tremendous amount of force and a lot on your low back. So you got to make sure you're technique is right and that you're bracing well to really handle that force.
Yeah.
But if done right, yeah, you can gain a lot of power from those exercises, and they could have very good carryover to other exercises, such as the deadlift. But
sure.
Technique is definitely important.
Right, right. Now, Dan, if I could summarize what you said prior to getting into the kettlebell swing, is the snatch and the clean, which are very common movements in CrossFit, are really a progression of both deadlifts and squats. So before going into CrossFit or just in general, people should really master their form and technique in the deadlift and squat, because those are really core movements. Am I right?
Definitely.
Now, for new people that don't have that low back strength, don't have the core strength, is how many days apart should one be separating? So if you go, you know, starting to do deadlifts and so forth on a Monday, how many days would you like people to see ideally before they do, say, a nice squat and lower leg routine?
Well, I think that depends. So if I was seeing somebody, I don't know if you're familiar with the program Starting Strength by Mark Ripito. This program has beginners basically taking a pretty kind of moderate weight to start, which I think is a good idea because you start mastering technique, but you're doing those exercises a pretty high frequency, maybe 3 times a week. And the goal is that you're adding something to the bar, even if it's just like 5 pounds. So I think you can get away with that as a beginner, as long as you start fairly light. But, because really, I think the most important thing is the technique. Mm-hmm. If, say, for example, like myself, I will really only, or like myself or you as well, somebody who has been training a while, has good technique, may only deadlift heavy once a week or maybe once every 2 weeks, essentially, because the amount of weight and the stress that we're putting on our body needs a bit longer to heal than, say, a beginner who's using a weight that realistically they could probably do, you know, for 10, but we're only having them for maybe 5 reps or 3 reps at a time, just working on that technique. So I think it depends on the relative intensity of the load and how well trained the athlete is or the client.
Mm. Okay, that makes sense. So if you're just doing the bar or maybe the bar plus 10 pounds, you're not putting that much stress. But as the weight really increases, that can set you up for injury if you overdo it.
Yeah, as well as like we kind of mentioned in the beginning of this, your outside factors as well. Are you eating, sleeping, resting? You know, how well are you recovering in between the workouts? I think if all that is in place, that may allow for a bit more training than if not.
Perfect, Dan. So as we wrap up, is there any age limit that you would put on incorporating squats, deadlifts, and some of these more basic compound movements? I mean, if a 70-year-old woman comes to see you, are you going to recommend that she start doing these basic movements, or is there kind of an upper threshold, or should everyone do it? What's your opinion?
Well, I think in some form or fashion, I think everybody should be learning these movements. If you look at the core basics of the movement, you're doing them daily in life anyway, so why not train them properly and get stronger at them? So say an elderly woman, she may want to pick up her grandson. That is going to incorporate basically a deadlift.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not saying that I would take, you know, day one grandma into the gym and load a barbell, but she may pick up a lighter kettlebell, which is raised up off the ground, to basically learn how to develop that movement and to gain strength in that movement. So in some form or shape, I do believe that just about anybody at any age should learn and be practicing these core movements, a deadlift, the hip hinge, essentially, and a squat as well.
Yeah.
Bench press, maybe not so much, because that's pretty non-functional. But squat and deadlift, I think, in some shape or form.
Mm-hmm. When you say non-functional, I mean, outside of like having nice pectoral muscles, the bench press, we're not really doing that in real life. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, unless you're maybe a wrestler or, you know, compete in powerlifting.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty rarely are you on your back pushing somebody off of you. and on that, I mean, having your feet as low or lower than your body. So it's a pretty non-natural movement or position to put your body in. So that might be what I would say, maybe more of a non-functional exercise that isn't necessarily essential for everybody. But I think the squat and the deadlift definitely.
It's funny you bring that up, and I'm just thinking out loud here. It's really for aesthetic purposes. I mean, I don't remember the last time, except for I have a filing cabinet in my office that I needed to use my pectoral muscles to move, but that was like once a year. We really don't use our pecs much in real life. It's just purely for aesthetics, and it's kind of the thing that guys do every Monday at every gym throughout the world. Everyone is bench pressing. It's just kind of ironic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, some of them might be more functional, for example. This is kind of on a side rant here, but maybe like a cable chest press or something where you're a bit more upright and your shoulder blades are able to move as well. That may mimic, you know, more so pushing your car that just died, or like you said, a filing cabinet, pushing more so rather than having your back up against the bench and pressing off of that. So that might be a more functional alternative, but... yeah, for it's really more about, I think, more the ego thing, the bench press, or if you're doing competition, or, yeah, developing your pec muscles, the athletics part.
That's funny. Okay, Dan, so there's two last questions that I like to ask every guest, and this is your favorite nutrient and or supplement that you would recommend to most of your clients. Now, this can be vitamin D, omega-3s, creatine, carnitine, beta-alanine. What do you generally take in your own life, and what do you find yourself recommending quite frequently?
Okay, so this, for me, legally, I'm not supposed to necessarily say, hey, go take the supplement. So I do have to throw out that disclaimer that I'm not saying go take this, but I do find myself really finding value in creatine based on what I do. I compete in powerlifting. That helps basically to help you generate that more of that creatine phosphate energy system. So, or at least that's the idea behind it, really loading that in so you have more creatine and you can generate a bit more force, maybe get another rep or two at a high intensity or high weight. That being said, yeah, I don't necessarily recommend it to everybody, and that's more from a standpoint of my position that I'm in. Because if, say, Sally or Joe, who I told to go take creatine, they have a heart attack because for some reason the company that they bought the creatine from put something else in it, then I could be liable. So
I totally get that. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now let's talk about the types of, there's creatine monohydrate, there's creatine alpha-ketoglutarate, there's creatine magnesium glycinate, I think, from Albion. There's many different forms. What's your favorite form?
I would say more recently I've been supplementing with crealkaline. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be more of a buffered type, because what I do, I compete in a weight class sport. So powerlifting, I actually cut down to compete at a lower weight than I normally hang out at. So taking this, it's supposedly supposed to minimize the bloating effect that you might get from a creatine monohydrate. How much of that is really just, you know, he say, she say kind of thing, I'm not too sure. But in my last competition, I was able to monitor my weight and continue taking creatine basically up until the competition, and I was still able to make weight just fine. So I didn't really notice a huge bloat effect from it. And I do some water manipulation really towards the end to make sure that I make the weight. So I would say that form so far has been my favorite.
Yeah, that's a pretty good form. I've played around with that. And like you mentioned, it's nice. You don't need the loading doses that you do with the creatine monohydrate, and you don't need all the extra sugar. I remember back in, you know, late 90s, you know, when I was, you know, playing football in high school, everyone was taking creatine monohydrate, and for 5 grams of creatine, you had, I don't know, 25 or 30 grams of dextrose, and people were getting fat. And it's like, why am I getting fat? We're playing football 2 days and you're taking all this extra sugar. So, the crealkaline material, I know that's used quite frequently now. And yeah, that has some good research, I believe. But like you said, I don't know how much of that is published data or if it's internal company data, but as long as you're getting the results, and you know, Dan, you're a world record holder in the state of Washington for powerlifting, so it must be doing something effective for you. So that's really great. Now, the last question is the lifestyle tip I like to ask everyone. So this can be related to fitness or just life in general, but if there was one tip that you could recommend to all your clients, you know, in 30 seconds or less that you would love for them to incorporate in their life. And that can be balancing stress. That can be sleeping 8 to 10 hours a night. That can be, you know, avoiding late night dinners. What would it be?
I would say stick with it. Consistency, I think, wins overall in terms of whether or not you're going to make progress. I think this could really apply to life as well. Stick with it, stick through it. There will be hard parts where you might not see success. But as long as you're continually incorporating good habits to set you up for it, I think it will eventually follow through. So I think just stay consistent and stick with it.
That's
probably my biggest piece.
I like it. Yeah, no one said that before, so that's really cool. And to highlight on that, I mean, had you not stuck with it when you hurt your back bench pressing when you were 13, you wouldn't be here right now. Who knows what you'd be doing? And look at how fitness has really changed your life and has enabled you to improve the lives of many others. So sometimes adversity, though we can't see it, you know, at first it's really good for us and we just have to stick with it and grind it out and know that, you know, there's better days ahead sometimes.
Certainly.
So awesome, Dan. Well, this has been great. Now let's talk about where people can find your work. I know you're a contributing blogger to the Alpha Project and some other sites. So let's share with our listeners how they can reach out to you and learn more about you.
Definitely. So yeah, I do write for the Alpha Project now, and that can be found at www.fuelthedesire.com. That's mostly a bench press and strength based program and blog. And then I do have my own blog, www.idealstrength.com. And then you can also follow anything that I often like and share quite a bit of health and fitness information that I find on my Facebook page, which is just simply my name. So Dan Stevenson, you can look me up and add me as well. So
Perfect. That
would be, I think, generally where you can find most of my work.
Awesome. And so the listeners that are listening to this will be on the show notes, highintensityhealth.com/Dan. And I'll have all these websites that he mentioned, idealstrength.com and fuelthedesire.com and his Facebook page. So, Dan, thanks again for joining us. You shared a lot of great information that I hope our listeners will enjoy and hope you have a good Sunday afternoon.
Thank you. You too. And happy birthday to you.
Oh, thank you.
It's been a pleasure being on the show.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone.